Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jason Lewis, and you're listening to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Before I introduce today's guest, I do want to thank our sponsor, QBAC. QBAC is a next-generation advancement solution that reimagines alumni engagement to drive giving. QBAC's proactive, personalized approach to engagement helps you build your major gift pipeline even in a time of social distancing. QBAC's AI-driven system uncovers actionable insights about alumni interest and connections and automatically delivers them to advancement professionals for use in cultivation. QBAC is a force multiplier for development officers, enabling them to focus on what they do best, developing deep relationships with individuals and converting them into active donors. Learn how to raise more money with less by going to www.qbac.com to schedule a free demo. I would also like to tell you about Responsive Fundraising's training. If you are looking to align your team around a shared understanding of effective fundraising, let's talk about our four frameworks. If your culture doesn't feel right, before you begin any significant planning, launch a capital campaign, hire another member of your team, let's ensure everyone is on the same page. How about inviting us to be on site with your board, leadership team, volunteers, and staff for your next planning event? If you'd prefer a virtual seminar, we can do that too. Let's get your team thinking more critically and carefully about the road ahead. Shoot me an email. I'll also put some information in the show notes. Hi, podcast listeners. I am delighted today to have our new sponsor, Arnie and Daniel with QBAC are here today to introduce themselves, tell us a little bit about their company, and talk about what's sort of going on in their heads this week. Before we talk a little bit about what QBAC is all about and what it means to do what you guys do, why don't you just introduce yourselves?
Hi. Thanks, Jason, for having us on. My name is Arnie Papp. I'm the CEO and co-founder of QBAC. And basically, QBAC has reimagined alumni engagement to fundamentally drive giving. And in that process, what we are doing are things like automating the qualification process and to help build the pipeline, and also using technology to uncover insights about prospects to move them through move a prospect through the pipeline to become a realized donor. Yeah.
And thanks for having me on as well, Jason. I am Daniel. I'm the other co-founder of QBAC. I do a lot more of the technology side at the company, and I think sort of covered what QBAC is about a little bit.
Yeah, well, I am delighted to have you guys on today. And once again, I want to thank you for being our sponsors for the next several months. We certainly appreciate that. Arnie, I know you've been a guest before on the podcast. Before we sort of dive into some conversation, why the interest in being our sponsor?
Oh, well, it was I believe in what you're doing. And I'm not from the industry, like you have a long history in the industry.
Sure.
I do have some experiences that are relevant to the industry. And that goes back to being a first generation scholarship student myself, you know, being a major gift donor, being involved in relationship selling. This is more on the in the for-profit world, but doing that for many decades, and, you know, been involved in Silicon Valley for a long time, and I've operated at the VP level of, managing teams of, the equivalent of relationship fundraisers, major gift offices, etc. So that was kind of my background. And sometimes when you come in from the outside, you can look at things, I would say objectively. I don't have any preconceived notions of how that this world should operate. And so I did, the more I sort of learned and attended conferences and spoke to people, I think I saw some things that seemed suboptimal, let's put it that way. Yeah. And what you do is try to get people to think deeply about some fundamental issues. And, you know, so I'm always, you know, attracted to people who also try to just speak frankly about issues, mm-hmm. you know, coming from a place that is trying to do good, not in a sort of negative way, but actually just to try to improve a particular situation. So I think that's always a good thing. So I'm happy to be associated with the work that you're doing, because I think, you know, the more of us that can sort of, you know, come up with different ways and ideas, the more that we can have a discussion, the more likely the industry as a whole is going to improve. And I think we're in a particular environment where some real change needs to happen. And my one fear that I have is, I personally, I think the worst is not, we haven't hit the rock bottom yet. And the reason why I say that is because I see a lot of what I call tinkering around the edges. And when you're, you know, core assumptions are so fundamentally different, you know, your operating environment is so different today than it was, say, you know, 12 months ago. I don't believe tinkering around the edges is what's going to make the real difference, get us through this period and prepare us for the new future that we're all going to face. And so, you know, you're a big part of that. So that's, you know, I'd like to feel like that we can perhaps add a little bit of value in there as well.
Yeah, and I think that second point is also what attracted me initially when I was first hearing about your podcast. You know, you're okay with trying to push the envelope a bit. It's not controversy for controversy's sake, but it's discussions that need to be had to propel the entire industry forward. So, you know, I definitely like the idea and the willingness to try to push the envelope.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, guys. Yeah, one of the things that we want to do, and all of our listeners know that, is that we're all about asking sort of the tough questions that the fundraising profession is sort of faced with these days. I sort of see myself as sort of that last of a generation who sort of came through the back door. A lot of us who have been around for a couple of decades would say that fundraising wasn't sort of our first career choice. We perhaps came from other domains and we landed in fundraising sort of haphazardly or accidentally or like I said, through the back door. But I think there's a younger generation that are coming in much more deliberately, like the students that I teach over at the college. And I think we see, I think they're wanting to be more intentional about this. I know they want to be more intentional about pursuing this career path. And therefore I think it should be an expectation for those of us, like ourselves, like the three of us here who are sort of championing what it is we do in the profession, to think carefully and critically about what we're doing. So I really appreciate that. Would you guys mind just telling us about what QBAC is and what you do? I don't think that you're one of those brands that a lot of our people in the fundraising space are going to be especially familiar with. Part of my job in the next several months is to help change that. But let's talk about what QBAC does and start creating some buzz for you guys.
Okay. Thanks, Jason. Okay, so you can think of it as fundamentally two components. There is an alumni-facing component. That's the alumni engagement app. And, you know, there's a web component to that. We use email as a channel. We use it as a mobile app, et cetera. Now, there is some similarity to social media, but it's more like a private walled garden, and there's reasons why I think this approach will come back more into vogue in the future. I think it was around a long time ago, then Facebook came along and everyone sort of outsourced a lot of their engagement to Facebook. I think there's some real fundamental issues doing that, and as I mentioned earlier on, one is you are not getting the most value from that engagement. I think all 100% of the value should go to the university, not 90% going to Facebook and other applications. The whole thing about privacy is a lot more people are aware of that. And in particular, what we do on the alumni engagement side is we're very focused on being age friendly. So it's cross-generational platform, but with a specific additional focus on being age-friendly, because it's the baby boomer generation that is the target demographic for major principal and plan giving. And so that's important because we use the alumni engagement application to feed data into the dashboards and reports for development officers, the VPs. And so these reports, there are three buckets in these reports. One bucket relates to the qualification process, how to use technology and engagement to automatically qualify your pipeline. And then the second bucket relates to cultivation, is how to uncover insights from that engagement so that you can use those insights to understand how your prospects, what makes them tick. You know, what do they care about? Who do they care about? Why do they care about? Who are their connections and influences? All those sorts of things that are the bread and butter of a gift officer to move that prospect, build that relationship and move that prospect through the pipeline to become a realized donor. And then the third bucket that we have in terms of the reports are related to impact analysis. So that relates to content impact analysis, event impact analysis, whether that's real world events or virtual events, and basically measuring not just are we reaching people, because I could reach alumni by putting funny cat videos on Facebook and getting a lot of likes, but that doesn't help the university raise more money because there's no connection between that funny cat video and the mission of the university. You know, that's not emotionally connecting them to the university or strengthening their alumni identity. So, you know, we focus on measuring impact as it relates to major principal and plan giving alumni.
Yeah, and the last point also relates to what we do to help build the culture of philanthropy. A lot of it's to see, you know, how does each department right now, affect the philanthropy's goals? I think there's another podcast that you had a guest on. He was saying that, alumni relations 25 years ago, they were trying to figure out, what metrics should we be using to judge alumni relations effectiveness. And he says, 25 years later, he thinks that people haven't really fully figured it out. And he thinks it's because it should depend on the institution. And he says previously, he's measured by things like, how many events did he have? And he's questioning, is the number of events really the most important thing that alumni relations should be focusing on? Because people are going to optimize for the different metrics they're personally judged for. But if the metrics don't align with what the culture of philanthropy is about, what you're trying to achieve through that as the entire institution as a whole, then you're not really rowing in the same direction, so to speak.
So when I'm looking at your website, I know you guys have got, Arnie, you've been on here before, but I don't think I've ever asked the question sort of when I've talked to either of you. Why this? Why alumni relations? Why? What sort of caught your vision and created the vision?
Yeah, a good question. So, I was in a previous startup. I've been doing startups now for 28 years, and two of them, the previous four, were successful, which is, believe it or not, in Silicon Valley is actually considered a very high batting percentage. But I did cash out. The last one was a sort of $1 billion acquisition. I was in early. I wasn't the founder, but I was in very early, cashed out, and technically had retired in a way. And then I started, I was an early investor in Facebook before they went public. And then I sort of became a bit disillusioned about social media. And then as Daniel was graduating from Cal Poly, I would get these solicitations from the university where both my sons went to. And it just struck me as an odd way to be reaching out to me. And I looked into it and I was hearing that they use Instagram and Twitter. And I'm thinking, well, that's not me. And I'm a technology guy. I'm in Silicon Valley. I'm not an engineer, but I am very comfortable with technology. And so just seeing a little bit about that. And then again, given my background, as being a first gen scholarship student, I wouldn't have ended up in Silicon Valley where I am today if I hadn't had that opportunity to go to universities. I'm a huge believer in education And the, you know, the reasons why I think a lot of gift officers get into this profession is to do good, you know, to raise money to help people like myself. So, you know, you get to that point in life where you do things because you do it because you want to do it. You enjoy what you do. It's not so much about the financial gain anymore. It's about trying to do something that is positive. And again, you know, given my background, and I, you know, maybe it's a little bit of similarity how you end up getting into the industry as well. Many years ago, you find yourself gradually, you know, it wasn't a plan, but before you know it, you're in it, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's what happened. You know, I started, you know, pulling on different threads, and then I started realizing that the more I started moving from the alumni relations side of things to the development side of things, the fundraising side, the more I realized, oh, wow, okay, when I strip away the jargon or translate that, there's a lot of similarities to what I've done in the past in selling these, you know, mission-critical software systems around the world that had very long sales cycles, multi-year sales cycles, multiple stakeholders, et cetera. And I thought, okay, well, you know, maybe, you know, my background of technology, relationship fundraising, knowing what it's like to be a recipient of this whole process, and, you know, maybe I can help in some small way. So that's what drives me, you know.
Daniel, why did you decide to partner up with your dad and do this?
I make lots of good decisions in my life, but I think it helps a lot when you have, you know, you see people on the recipient end of the fundraising, right? So
yeah.
You know, I think our advisor, Travis McDermott, you know, always yeah. tells us, you know, it's all about the students. Right. He says that's something that he tells his donors as well. And, you know, my dad, as you mentioned earlier, is a needs-based scholarship recipient, wouldn't have been able to attend college and higher education without, you know, being on that receiving end. I've had friends as well who are also in the same boat as my dad. So, you know, I think when, you know, if I didn't have those personal relationships with people who are recipients of the good work that fundraisers do, I think, you know, there's a chance I wouldn't have, you know, gone into this industry. I think, you know, I'm a millennial, and as we all know, a lot of millennials have a maybe slightly different attitude towards giving to institutions. And, you know, all they really see and all, you know, I saw when I was younger too was, you know, tuition's expensive. If you go to a state school, it's state funded, and you don't really see the importance and the effectiveness of what the donations dollars actually do for a lot of people and a lot of their families as well. So I think because I was having the close proximity to people who were, you know, beneficiaries of a lot of good work and a lot of good donations by great people, I was able to join the fundraising industry, and it makes a lot of sense for me to do something like this.
So how does a company like yours, because you're a technology company, and yep. I'm a podcast that likes to pick on fundraising practices sometimes, and sometimes I'm picking on technology. Yeah. And sometimes technology plays, in my opinion, sometimes technology is playing too significant of a role mm-hmm. in our thinking. And so how do we make sure that technology is given its appropriate place? And how do we ensure that it's got a meaningful and how do we ensure that it can play a meaningful role? Because, you know, I use technology everywhere I go, but I also know that every organization I give to, for example, I have meaningful relationships with those people, with human beings.
Mm-hmm. Can I speak about that actually? Yeah. So that's actually one of the reasons why I liked it, is because you want to understand. I think if you're from Silicon Valley or from the tech world, you talk, you know, you're friends with a lot of engineers. You see technology as this great thing. You can push society forward. But what I really liked about some of your podcast episodes is that you pushed back on that and said, understood that, you know, technology can't replace humans, right? Even our slogan, if you've ever seen that, is AI with a human touch, because we know that there's certain things that technology is very, very good for, and it's very useful for, but it's never going to replace a human being, right? I can, you know.
Yeah. So it is about getting that balance and understanding what technology can do for you and what it can't do for you. And, you know, I look at technology, well, and particularly in this environment where there are budget constraints, headcount freezes, social distancing, right? So technology is, you know, one is a cost-effective way to scale a fundraising operation. You can do things like, you know, discovery and qualification at a distance. It can operate, you know, 24/7, 365 days a year. You don't have to worry, well, I can't meet this prospect at a Starbucks to uncover this information. What am I going to do? Type of thing. We can leverage technology now to do those sorts of things. And so technology then becomes not a replacement, but a force multiplier for development offices. And, you know, I'm a, again, my background's relationship selling in the fintech space. And so I'm a huge believer that ultimately it's a human being. But I think it's a real disservice, though, not to employ technology, particularly given the challenges that we face today. And I remember, you know, Wall Street, you know, how it, I'm going to be writing about this later on, actually, about how it sort of embraced technology. And, you know, I think the institutions that understand how to leverage technology, the ones that thrive and prosper, and the ones that sort of, you know, think it's all just old school, you know, glad handling and meeting for lunches and dinners, that's, I just think that's not the way forward anymore, particularly because we have some very new challenges facing the industry. And people like myself who are baby boomers, you know, look, trust me, I'm not in a rush to go out and meet a gift officer at Starbucks. Right. For me, you know, you want my money and then you want me to take on additional risk. No, I'm not going to do that, you know.
I appreciate that. So before I let you guys go, so Arnie, Daniel, tell me who I've got a lot of people who are listening to this podcast, and probably some of the people aren't the ones that you necessarily would expect to hear from, and some of them are the perfect people you want to hear from. So if one of my listeners today is saying, I'm going to check out these guys at QBAC, I'm going to go on their website, what do you expect that sort of initial conversation to look like if they sort of ping your website, fill out your form or something? What's that initial conversation going to look like, and who is that ideal client for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, the ideal person I'd love to talk to is a VP of advancement, and because they understand the alumni relations side, they understand the development side, and I always say those are two sides of the same coin. They understand the big picture. They understand the importance of creating a culture of philanthropy. It's not just about individual producers and how to get not just alumni relations and development working together, but how to reach out and get career services, student affairs, the library, athletics, all of these, recruiting, retention, all these sorts of areas of the organization working together. So that's, you know, those strategic thinkers that, you know, operate both at the tactical and strategic level across departments. That is my ideal person to talk to. That being said, you know, obviously, then the development, the major gift officer, because that's who we're trying to help the most, because we're trying to help the fundraisers that move the needle. So we don't, not so much involved on annual giving, people in charge of the phone-a-thons, because it's that doesn't really move the needle, to be frank about it. Though we can help in that, but that's not the maximum where we could add value. Other people that I enjoy talking to are prospect development people, because they are a lot more savvy with technology. They're a lot more savvy with data. And I'm going to be writing about this topic as well. I just see prospect development becoming a lot more integrated with development instead of being a service provider in the back room. It kind of reminds me of what I used to see in Wall Street, literally back in the 80s and 90s, you know, and that industry changed for very good reasons, because they understood the value of data and how to leverage technology to make those frontline traders, in that case, more effective. I think we're going to see that in the same trend in the fundraising industry. And so there are a lot of people in prospect development who see that, also see that future trend. And so they're always interesting people for us to talk to as well.
Yeah, and we're always, you know.
And alumni, the other one, sorry, I shouldn't miss our good friends in alumni relations, because And that ties into the, you know, the other thing I look at when I mentioned data earlier on is, you know, alumni relations, they're the custodian of the alumni relationship. They're the sort of focal point for the institution. And one of the things that, you know, we try and do is how to repurpose content so that multiple stakeholders can benefit from the same alumni engagement content. And that's where, you know, the alumni relations people are, you know, they're the sort of the focal point to be able to facilitate that that repurposing on, of content so that it helps career services with their retention goals. It helps admissions with their recruiting goals. It helps student affairs with, you know, building a better ROI because you know, students are for parents so that you know, they parents can see their students graduating sooner rather than taking 5 or 6 years, et cetera. So that, you know, so every department, there's a slightly different angle, but it's, in my view, it's all related. So it depends on which angle you want to come and have a dialogue with us. And that's the whole point though. I don't think they're all, I don't see them as all totally separate independent entities. And so if you want to talk to me from the development side or the advancement, the alumni relations side, prospect development, we're all going to end up in the same place because we should all have the same mission, in my view.
Yeah, I think it's great. So you guys know Travis. I think he's one of your sort of your advisors. Yeah. Is that right?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah, so Travis will be on here. I don't know. We've got a new publication here at Responsive, our linked up consulting group here with the podcast, and Travis is doing some writing for me, and we'll be publishing that hopefully by the end of the year, and so we'll have him on here. I was going to ask you guys, have you guys been out to Indianapolis with Travis and had the French toast that he took me to have the morning? There's a diner, I think it's in downtown Indianapolis. And it has got to be the best French toast that I've ever had.
Now you're showing off. You're just making me feel bad because, you know, I just said I'm not going to go to Starbucks down the corner. And but, you're hanging that in front of me now.
I think what, the reason I bring up Travis, too, is my guess is he's the type of guy because there's a lot of Travises there's a lot of people out there like Travis who are very thoughtful, frontline development officers, major gifts officer types, who think very critically about this. And those are the guys and gals who are generally listening to the podcast. I think it was Travis who introduced us and very grateful for that connection.
Oh, absolutely. And what I like about Travis, he's got that academic background. I call him the father of alumni identity. He's the first person to do his research in this area and prove that it's a driver of giving. So he's got that very solid academic PhD level background. He's been a practitioner for many years and he's also a critical thinker. You know, I call him, you know, like you, I call you guys, put you in the same category of the young Turks who are going to take the industry to the next level.
Yeah. And then we're going to hand it off to guys like Daniel. You're a little younger than us. And who knows what the hell you guys are going to do.
And we'll be sitting on the porch, you know, eating French toast.
Right. Well, guys, it has been a pleasure. I kept you for more than 25 minutes or so. I'm going to put a link. We'll make sure to put a link to QBAC in every one of our broadcasts forthcoming. And we'll make sure that people hear about you and know about you. And again, thank you for your sponsorship for the next several months. We really appreciate that.
Thanks, Jason. Appreciate the opportunity. You keep doing your good work.
Thanks a lot, Jason. Appreciate it.
Cheers, mate.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.